health, diet, fitness, lifestyle. The experts are here now. You're listening to It's Your Health Radio. And here's your host, Lisa Davis.
If you listen to It's Your Health Radio, you have probably heard me say more than once that I wish we could go back to the 70s, a time when I grew up when it was much simpler and everyone wasn't on their Blackberries and tweeting and Twittering and all that stuff. I was so thrilled to find today's guest, Susan Mauchart. She wrote the wonderful book, The Winter of Our Disconnect, how three totally wired teenagers and a mother who slept with her iPhone pulled the plug on their technology and lived to tell the tale. Susan, welcome to It's Your Health. Your book was so fantastic. And I have to say, that title is brilliant.
Oh, thank you so much, Lisa. That, I'm thrilled to hear that. You know, and not everybody loved the title. Some
really
wanted to change. Yeah, they thought it was like people wouldn't get it.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah, I don't know. I thought it was fantastic. I'm so glad you didn't change it.
Me too.
Yeah, it's a really great title. And, you know, you write in the book, quote, there were lots of reasons we pulled the plug on our electric media, or should I say I did, because heaven knows my children would have sooner volunteered to go without food, water, or hair products. At ages 14, 15, and 18, my daughters and son don't use media. They inhabit it. I'm big on hair products too, so.
Me too, as you know, having
read
the book.
Yes, definitely. So talk to us about how this came about.
Well, I guess, you know, it had been on the back burner for a long time, but more in the nature of a kind of parental fantasy, which I dare say is pretty common among the parents of teenagers. You just think to yourself, oh, God, well, you know, what would our lives be like if we didn't have all of this stuff around us, if our primary means of communication wasn't a screen but was, like in the old days, each other?
Yes.
And I guess I started thinking about it really seriously. It was really a conversation that I had with my son where I actually articulated that very question, you know, in a moment of supreme exasperation, just, you know, what would our lives be like without all this? And he paused briefly from, you know, snipering somebody on his computer game and said, our lives would be boring, that's what. And I found that so depressing, and it sort of sparked an interesting conversation between the two of us where I was like, you know, what are you saying, that before the invention of computer games, in all of human history, people were just bored? And he thought about that for a little while and said, well, they must have been, and that's why they invented the computer. Which I thought was clever, but also I felt it was proving my point.
Yes, definitely.
That you kind of needed space. He was calling it boredom. I would call it having an interior life, you know, having that time and space around you to think your own thoughts rather than siphoning, you know, entertainment, news, distractions of various kinds constantly. And I wanted my kids to experience that in a way almost like, you know, almost like time travel, as you were saying in your intro, like taking them to a foreign country, a land before screens.
Yes. You know, I love what you wrote about being bored, and you wrote, quote, I've been listening to my kids bleat on about being bored practically from the moment of conception. If their ultrasound photo had a caption, I have no doubt it would have been, Mom, there's nothing to do in here. There are so many funny things like that in your book, but getting back actually to what you were talking about with the boredom, but also, yeah, it's true. It just seems like we're always on. Now, my daughter's 6 and a half, so she isn't into all this yet. And it's probably odd because I know a lot of kids her age are.
That's true.
She's actually a little more into stuff that's younger for her age, which I actually like. This is going to come later. But
keep
her
regressed.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah, I think so. But it just seems like kids aren't able to just be kids.
I was just going to say, I think we all have a fear of boredom.
Yes.
And it's not just our children, but I think adults are very much the same. And to be honest, and, you know, I have to out myself, I was pretty much in exactly the same space that my kids were at, you know, channeling news and information constantly. I was, you know, had an unnatural relationship, I have to say, with my iPhone, rather typical one, but still highly inappropriate when you sleep, you know, with your iPhone.
Yeah.
And you buy it little outfits and you know, that's just not right. You know, you take it into the bathroom with you, and, you know, it was crazy. And so I, too, had a fear of boredom, the idea of being trapped on, you know, on a train or in a plane or even in my own home without a million different options to access, you know, a podcast or a newspaper or, you know, a book that I could download would almost give me a panic attack. And I was aware, too, that there's something really wrong with that. And, you know, how could I expect better of my kids when I was starting to get jittery, when my hand wasn't, you know, on the equivalent of a joystick, my equivalent, a keyboard?
Yeah, you know, well, part of what I love in the book is that you share with us part of the reason for this is that you uprooted your life in the States and went to Perth in Australia. And if you can tell us a bit about Perth and how different that was for you and how that's affected you.
Yeah, well, it was an unusual circumstance of my life that I happened to fall in love with an Australian when I was in graduate school. And so, you know, when he proposed to me and said, you know, would you like to get married? But, you know, we will be living in Australia and perhaps you'd like to visit first. And I was like, no, darling, I will follow you to the ends of the earth. I was 27.
Yeah.
And you know, he took me literally. He took me to Western Australia, which is as close to the ends of the earth as you can get. It is described as the world's most isolated big city. The closest city to Perth is actually Singapore, which is in the same time zone as Singapore. And our quickie holiday, like in New York, you might, you know, go down to the Bahamas or something. In Perth, you go to Bali. That's a short hop. So it's really a long way away, and by Australian standards, it's extraordinarily remote. I found that media was my lifeline. When I first used the internet, I had like a visceral sense of relief and delight, and thought, now I know that I can actually stay here and not lose my mind and live my life both professionally and otherwise. I was kind of stuck in Australia because I'd had three kids and, you know, their father was Australian. You can't just kind of gather them up and go home. It is, to paraphrase a writer that I read recently in The New Yorker, which cracked me up, it's the Australia of Australia.
Now, a place that I love to go here in Massachusetts is Walden Pond, and it's one of the first places that I visited because I'm actually from California. I've been here 10 years, and I really needed to connect with nature because it's very different here on the East Coast, and Walden is a big part of your book. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, Walden, you know, by Henry David Thoreau, was in many ways the inspiration for this book, or, you know, I guess my kids were the inspiration for it. But if I hadn't reread Walden at around the time that I was worrying about how we were all using our media, it never would have happened. Walden is my favorite book in the universe, and I do read it, I would say, every year. It's a kind of compass for me. In fact, this will make you laugh. I got a Kindle for Christmas, and I absolutely love it, and I was so excited to get it. See, I told you I wasn't a Luddite. And the first thing I downloaded onto the Kindle was Walden.
Oh.
And it was kind of a surreal experience reading this beloved text on this new platform, but it was every bit as good. And, yeah, I've always been inspired by Thoreau's reflections on living an authentic life, on living deliberately. And that is a word that he uses over and over again. And, you know, when I was considering what to do about the way we were using media in our home, that word, deliberately, was ringing in my head like a gong, that I felt that we had really kind of, had hung up my conscious sort of decision-making in all of this, that I just allowed my life to happen to me and to my family, and I no longer wanted that to be so. I wanted to live as Thoreau did, you know, in an experiment that was also an adventure. And I guess that's what we did when we unplugged for 6 months. That was our experiment in living. That was our retreat into the wilderness, if you will.
Oh, I love that. And I think now it makes me think of living mindfully, living deliberately, being
exactly.
present.
So I kind of had to be there, but I also had to have I had to feel like I was connected to the world. So the internet was extraordinarily important to me.
Yeah. So how was it for you then to disconnect? That must, I mean, I know, and I will get to how it was for your three children, but that must have been really challenging.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I'd gotten to the point where I was living in my head in the States, New York Times, my homepage, listening to NPR constantly through my earbuds. And I, you know, for me, it was an exercise in actually getting my head and my body to be in the same place together, which I, you know, I think is probably a much more authentic way to live. Like,
oh, yes.
Actually experienced aspects of my environment that I had been almost deliberately blocking off for years. And it was edifying and interesting, somewhat horrifying in some respects. But the upshot of it all over the course of the 6 months for me was that I decided that really one's mind and one's body should be living the same life at the same time. I do feel that there was a very strong spiritual dimension to undergoing that process of bringing the two spheres together. But I wanted to be living mine in New York again.
And you're back in New York now.
And I'm back in New York.
Oh,
now.
That's fabulous.
That's my latest experiment in living.
How are your children adapting?
Well, variously. My youngest is in high school locally. She's just started as a junior at Mattituck Senior High School here on Long Island. And this will amuse you given, you know, the nature of the book. Before we arrived, she friended her entire, like, graduating class on Facebook.
Oh, that's so cool.
It was so cool. She has made the most seamless transition because of that, even though I couldn't believe she was doing it at the time, and I just said, you're nuts. You can't possibly think of doing this. This is, you know, this is crazy. You don't make friends this way, but she just rolled her eyes at me. And as a digital native, she certainly knew best, because the day we went to enroll her in school, we were no sooner in the doors when somebody yelled out, hey, Sussy, come over here. And she ran
awesome.
Over to a group of her friends and hasn't looked back.
Yeah, that, I have to say, I think that's incredibly creative and really smart. I mean, because what a great way, because it's really tough. So that shows there's so many great uses of technology, which you talk about in the book, too. I mean, it's not like you want to stay unplugged forever. It's just, again, for you, I think it was so important to get your mind and your body in the same place. And then I think for people, if they could just, you know, moderate it a bit. I mean, it's kind of tough. So now your kids were allowed to use it outside of the home.
They were. That was part of our deal.
Yeah, and that makes sense.
Yeah, because, you know, it would be impossible to control it otherwise.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't want to disadvantage them, certainly in terms of their schoolwork.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it just seemed the right thing to do. And really, as you were just saying, the message of the book is certainly not that technology is evil. My God, I love technology.
Oh, yeah.
I'm as far from a Luddite as you could possibly get. But I do think that it's important to use technology deliberately.
Now, a moment ago, you referred to your daughter, Sussy, as a digital native, and I love that in the book. If you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's a great term. It's not, I didn't actually coin it, but it's so, so useful. And when I read about it for the first time, I was like, oh, my God, there's a word for this. I love it. Yeah, these are the generation of kids, and, you know, Sussy's now 16, so she's on the leading edge of this, who grew up with a mouse under their fingertips,
mm-hmm.
whose first words were, you know, mama, dada, and pewter. you know, who practically were teething on a keyboard. And for people like this, and you know this if you live with one, they really do use media as an extension of their brains. They have a different relationship with it. They sort of scoff at the instruction manual. They can, you know, they can fix things that you didn't even know were broken on your computer without looking back. You know, they have awesome abilities, truly awesome abilities, but they also are somewhat handicapped in dealing with a world that is unplugged. And, you know, always having to moderate all your interactions with the world through a screen, through a scrim or a curtain, is not really good for the soul. And so I think for digital natives in particular, you know, having a holiday, whether it's an enforced one or not, occasionally from all this stuff is particularly important. And of course, for the rest of us, we are digital immigrants. We don't, you know, we are from the old country. We struggle with the new ways. We can speak the lingo, but we'd have a definite foreign accent.
Well, you know, it's funny because I have never sent a text message. I don't have an iPhone or a BlackBerry, and people think I'm crazy. Like, if I, and half the time my cell phone's under the couch. So, you know, or if I do have my cell phone, like I was at the grocery store recently, and I work with over 90 publicists, and one of the publicists called and had a guest, and I said, you know, I'm at the grocery store. I'll email you when I get home. And I think it was like, what?
I have to say, that's so sane. And when you say it like that, it seems so obvious. Like, of course.
But yet I'm a freak, you know.
Right, but you're the freak.
Yeah.
Why don't we all do that? I don't know. The notion that we have to be constantly in touch, that we can't, you know, go to the grocery store without our phone, or really a kind of panic sets in. I'm out of touch. What if somebody needs me? I mean, it's really quite, if not insane, it's definitely unsane.
Yeah, well, you mentioned in the book that's so great about, I think, your daughter saying, well, what if this, you know, what if something happens? How is the school going to get in touch with you? And it's sort of like, well, how did they get in touch with people in the old days? You know, and not even the old days, but when we were growing up.
Exactly, and we're not even talking about, like, you know, it was interesting, the reaction of people when I first told them about the experiment. They were like, oh, so you're going back to, like, the 19th century. And I was like, no, I'm going back to, like, 10 years ago. You know, it has all happened so fast, and it's always hard for human beings to differentiate between needs and wants. You know, we're all disabled, I guess you could say. But I think when it comes to information, we are particularly disabled. We've kind of lost our bearings about what is necessary, what is desirable, and what's kind of sane and balanced.
Yeah, it's true. I think people do forget. I was flipping around recently and I came across Clueless, and they had
they had
cellular phones, but they were gigantic, like the size of your arm, right? And that, okay, that was
right.
1995.
Right, and that was so cutting edge, like, oh my God, they have a phone they can use anywhere? Wow.
And the other thing in the book that's so great is you have a lot of statistics that are pretty shocking. Like, American teenagers spend 8 to 5 hours a day in some form of mass media interaction.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
Yes. And that's, they've arrived at that figure by sort of picking apart the multitasking that teenagers do. So that if you're using 5 devices at once, you have a really sort of condensed relationship going on. So it's like maybe you spent an hour with 5 devices, but it's kind of like spending 5 hours.
Yes.
And that's, you know, that's an important, I think, distinction between the digital natives and the rest of us, is that multitasking thing. And it's exactly the opposite of what you were talking about before, where you like to do one thing at a time and devote your full attention to it.
That's rare.
That's becoming increasingly rare for our kids, and you know, they attempt to do their homework this way, and they also think they're being successful because they really don't know anything else. But, you know, having multiple involvements, which the cognitive scientists tell us is, you know, never really possible. You're doing 5 things at once, but you're always switching, you're toggling among these different tasks, and there is a price to be paid in efficiency and in focus and in depth.
Yeah, that's true. And it's funny because my husband gave me an iPod for Hanukkah, and I am a music fanatic, but I was just really, you know, I don't want it. No, because I know. And now I it's like I don't even want to go anywhere without my iPod. Although when I'm researching a show or reading a book, I'm not listening. I've never been able to listen to music or watch TV and read. I can't do that.
I can't do that either.
Never been able to do that. So,
right.
But now, though, but it is nice. So, like, you know, when I'm out with the dogs, it's nice to listen to music, or if I'm cleaning the house, you know, something like that. But the other day, my husband, we were cleaning the kitchen together, and I grabbed my iPod. He's like, what are you doing? We could spend some time together. I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you.
Yeah. Oh, hello. Like, you're the one who got me this damn thing, you know.
I found that when, you know, we gave up our media, I hoped that we would all become incredibly fit and active, because we wouldn't be spending so much time as couch potatoes, you know, sitting around with our laptops and all that. But we all found it was really, really difficult to get ourselves motivated to exercise without our iPods.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
You wrote, funny how nobody lived in the living room. Then again, we never familied in the family room either. We surfed there. And there was a lot of neat changes that happened. And I don't, you know, if you want to just touch on one or two, again, people have got to get this book and find out for themselves how your kids did during the winter of your disconnect. See, I just said disconnect. I guess I did get the title, didn't I?
Yeah. There was discontent as well.
Oh, maybe that was bad. That was apropos, right?
Yes.
Oh goodness. So they did have some really neat things happen, and especially your son. I'm not going to say what it was, but he really got in touch with a creative thing within him, and I'll just leave it at that. And it's pretty cool. How are they doing, by the way, now? So that means that Bill is now 18?
He's 17.
17, okay.
He'll be 18 in a few months, and Ani's 20, and Sussy, the youngest, is now 16.
Now, did Ani stay in Australia? Is she in school there, or...?
She's finishing a journalism degree.
Oh, great.
And she is working towards setting up an internship at a publisher in London for when she graduates, and then coming on and doing another internship in New York.
Oh, that's fabulous.
And Bill, without giving away his creative pursuit, let's just say that it actually has changed his life, and the course of study that he's pursuing is that particular creative pursuit.
Oh, that is so great. Now, has Sussie's screen time dropped down since the winter of your disconnect, or is it
very
sort of
good question.
Back where
very
it
good
was?
Question.
Thank you.
I have to say that in Sussie's case, I think I'm the person who learned more from the experience than she did. And what I learned is that for a child of Sussie's age, as a parent, I simply have to take more control. The other two, being older, were able to self-regulate once they went back on technology. And Suss, who is the most digital native of us all, had no intention of doing so. Even though she experienced how great life was in so many ways, she did herself so many more creative things, cooking, keeping a journal, writing a novel, playing board games. You know, it was enormous fun. But still, you know, her digital media, particularly her Facebook and her reality TV, those are the paths of least resistance for her, and, you know, fair enough.
Oh, yeah.
So she still needs her mom to come in and, like, physically unplug her from time to time, and then she's happy. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, yeah, that's great.
They get sort of, kids get cranky if they're stationed in front of a screen for too long.
Yeah, they really do. Well, I tell you, Susan, this has been so much fun, and I really hope you'll come to Boston sometime and have lunch with me or something. You were just delightful.
Oh, I would love to. Oh, my goodness. I would absolutely love to. Boy, the thought of taking a walk through the woods.
Oh, yes.
Well, with your dog. Yeah. That sounds so beautiful.
Well, it's so funny because I was going to say after this interview, I usually have back-to-back, but today I just wanted to do this one. And after this, I am off with my iPod to go to the woods. But I'm not bringing my cell phone with the boys, the dogs, and my good boys. No
Excellent.
Cell phone, just the iPod. I've been listening to Jackson Browne's Somebody's Baby over and over. I love that song.
I love that song, too.
It's so fun.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's really fun. Well, I want to thank you again. Now, do you have a website that you can give?
Well, I do. It's SusanMouthart.com.
Okay, that is fabulous. Well, Susan, again, The Winter of Our Disconnect. Everyone get this book. It is fantastic. And if you want to learn more about It's Your Health, you can go to itsyourhealthnetwork.com. You can listen to audio archives. We have 15 categories now to choose from on all different health topics. You can watch It's Your Health TV. And soon I will be on Discover New England, which is a very popular magazine show here in New England. I will be doing health segments on the program. So that's local, but I will get those up on my site. Everyone have a great week. Go somewhere without technology. That is my advice. Have a great week. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
For a list of what's coming up and archived shows, go to www.itsyourhealthnetwork.com.